is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. It has been a busy week in Douglas County once the wildfires began. One of the people involved behind the scenes and in front of the scenes often as well, getting the information out to folks, Sergeant Brad O'Dell with the Douglas County Sheriff's Office. Brad, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, Kyle. Thanks for having me today. I appreciate it.
And obviously, it's been a very busy week. How are things looking today?
Well, things seem to be slowing down a little bit as far as the emergency side of things go, which is really good news. You've noticed over the last several days we've had a reduction in emergency evacuations. We've even, gotten some folks back into their homes. There's still a lot of progress to be made, but things are, on the emergency side of things, looking a lot better than what they were a week ago.
Run down some of the current statuses of some of these areas that are at different evacuation levels.
Yeah, so we currently have a level 3 in place for the Thielson fire for the Diamond Lake specific area around the lodge and the resort there. So all of that remains a level 3. Dry Creek is a level 3 as well for the Archie Creek fire that is kind of burning in that area near Steamboat and continuing to be active in the area there. Everything from Steamboat Creek all the way down to the Idyllwild Trading Post remains a level 3. There is a lot of hazard in that area, a lot of falling debris. ODOT, our partners there, are continuing to try to clear the road and mitigate those hazards so that it would be safe to open that back up to the public. Then some of the areas like Rock Creek Road remain hazardous as well, but we have folks that are in there trying to clear those out and make those safe. From Idyllwild Trading Post all the way back to Glide, which was previously under a level 3, is now a level 2. That includes Lone Rock Road and Barrel Ranch Road, as well as Terrace and Upper Terrace. The Barrel and Terrace areas were downgraded last night just a little bit, around 7 o'clock, I believe. And so we have that back into a level 2. Folks are able to return there if they would like to do so. And Little River Road from Highway 138 East to Buckhorn is a level 2. Everything from Buckhorn on up Little River remains a level 3. There is fire that is burning in that area, and there's a lot of fire activity that's happening in there with wildland firefighting and structural protection. On the Sutherland side of things, Nonpareil Road from the very end down to Hinkle Creek is a level 3. Everything from Hinkle Creek down to Banks Creek is a level 2. And then from Banks Creek down to Platte K has been reduced to a level 1. And then several days ago, we announced that the French Creek fire had been put into patrol status. And those areas that were affected on Single Tree Lane, North Bank Road, and the area of Rivershore Drive have also been reduced to a level 1.
Let's go back a week when the winds hit in the morning, and talk about just what those first few hours was like.
Well, so that we had a red flag warning that was put into effect. I think people started knowing about this a couple of days before, and then Tuesday morning at about 1:30, I received a phone call saying that there was a large fire burning in Glide off of French Creek Road. The winds were very heavy out in the Glide area. At my house in Roseburg, we didn't have a lot of winds, but at the closer I got out to the Glide area that morning, it was really surprising how quickly how fast those winds were moving, and it was creating a lot of complications for the fire crews that were out there working. It was really hazardous conditions that, combined with the wind and the already high fire damage, just made things a recipe for disaster.
as well as we got to mid-morning, and maybe a tad earlier, as the fire was evolving, I remember hearing a number of situations where, and I'm not even sure who it was, if it was deputies or other folks working to help, were trying to get people out of houses. And in a few cases, folks initially were trapped. And it was a very fast-moving, very fluid situation.
It really was. So again, this incident really kicked off with the French Creek fire. So we had the French Creek fire that was burning. And so we had initially sent our patrol deputies out there to begin evacuations. We dispatched our search and rescue unit as well as additional deputies to that area to begin notifying residents that, you know, this situation was changing so quickly. Like I mentioned, the winds and everything were just, it was just really making this fire move so quickly. And so we had folks out there that were making door-to-door notifications and telling folks what dangers were existing and trying to get individuals to leave their homes if it was appropriate for them to do so. And then, you know, as the morning progressed, I learned about another fire that was burning in the Umpqua National Forest just beyond kind of the Moorhill Lane, milepost 35 area of Highway 138 East. And so some crews were able to get up in there. It was determined that it was starting to become a very big hazard for some of the residential areas. So we then had to divert our resources from the French Creek fire up to what is now known as the Archie Creek fire. So we got those folks up into those areas. They began making notifications and contacting homeowners and letting them know what was going on. And it just seemed like it was a whirlwind. This fire moved so quickly that it seemed like I was putting out updates every 10 to 15 minutes about evacuations. You know, my knowledge of time is a little bit blurry there because everything moved so quickly. But we were able to do a lot of really good work. We had search and rescue and deputies that were out there, and during the course of that day made approximately 35 miles worth of notifications between Highway 138 and Rock Creek Road, all of those areas, making notifications. And so I think that that's a really big success story, is the fact that we were able to make those notifications so quickly. The emergency management, the sheriff's office, the commissioners were involved. We've all been involved in these types of situations before. And so our system was really rehearsed and was down really, you know, to where it worked well. The other testament here is the fact that our community members really listened to what was going on.
Well, and one of the things I was just thinking about, you talked about your sense of time being a little confused, and just as quickly as you were putting information out, we were putting that information out, and it was changing very fast. And the trick for our end of things is making sure we put it in a cohesive order and didn't confuse people, because there was so much to talk about. At the same time, I was aware that some of the people out in the fire area had lost power, and some of them overnight or early in the morning. So some of them didn't have the resources necessarily to check things, depending on, for instance, where they listened to the radio, or they could monitor social media, et cetera. And if they had power out and didn't have a device charged, et cetera, some folks were kind of in the dark as this was starting to evolve.
Yeah, and so again, that's where the door-to-door notifications really came into play. The county has a reverse 911 system that we utilize on major incidents for public notification. I've talked about that several times, about how folks can sign up for those. Those really are life-saving notifications. And so, I would encourage someone who relies on a cell phone. A lot of times these days, folks have done away with a landline telephone, and they rely so heavily on a cell phone that we don't already have that number programmed into our system. And so by someone signing up and putting their cell phone number associated with an address, we can get those notifications out. And so, you know, that was another big piece of this, And I think that a lot of folks received those notifications and took them seriously and heeded the advice, and which is, you know, that's all that we can ask for. So I applaud everybody for doing that. You know, if you're not yet signed up for those emergency notifications, I'd encourage you to do that by going to the Sheriff's Office Facebook, or I'm sorry, the Sheriff's Office website at www.dcso.com/alerts.
All right, Brad O'Dell, Sergeant Brad O'Dell from the Douglas County Sheriff's Office, back with more Inside Douglas County in just a moment. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Lars Larson Show coming up at 1 o'clock. Sergeant Brad O'Dell from the Douglas County Sheriff's Office with us this afternoon. And Brad, actually, as you started describing things over the past several days, it dawned on me that we've been dealing with this situation for exactly a week now.
That is correct, yeah. Today is 1 week since all of this kicked off. And everyone has been highly engaged from the beginning. You know, we're working very closely with the local fire resources out there, as well as the fire management team. The sheriff has been involved on a daily basis, as well as the county commissioners. Each one of them have been involved and are aware of what's going on and are, you know, saying, how can we help? There's been a great response from the county as well that I think is really important to highlight. We have our animal control deputy who has been assisting folks with evacuating animals and finding places to keep these animals. We have the fairgrounds that has opened up their facilities not only for the Red Cross, but also for the fire management team. They've got animal boarding there as well. You know, the commissioners worked really hard and worked with the fair board to get that accomplished, I believe. We have Public Works has been engaged helping us with roadblocks and keeping people safe. We have crews that are trying to clear hazard trees from the roadways. Senior Services has been delivering meals or having meals at the Glide Community Center. You know, there's a great deal of work that's taking place. The assessor's office and the planning department have been heavily involved. This is really just a really coordinated response. And, of course, Wayne Stinson, the emergency manager, has been really in the depths of things, working with the fire team and commissioners and everyone, just trying to get the resources and information pushed up to the state that we, you know, are working with.
When I came in early Tuesday morning last week about 3 a.m., the police scanner, normally very quiet, aside for the occasional DUI or something like that that hour, was just nonstop back-to-back, and I realized what was going to be likely the remainder of the day. It was just so clear. Talk about the importance of the dispatchers who are really the first ones that have to deal with this going from 0 to 100 like that.
You know, our dispatchers here are amazing people. You know, they have hearts of gold, and they work very hard. And that dispatch center got overwhelmed very quickly, but all of the staff handled that with professionalism. They continued to relay critical information to all of the fire crews that were working, as well as logging all of the information that we were providing them as far as who's been evacuated, who hasn't. You know, they were continuing to answer those 911 calls in the midst of all of this chaos and continuing to provide life-saving services to members of our community, still dispatching ambulances and other law enforcement resources to other parts of the county that were being requested of them. And, you know, really they're the calm voice in the middle of the storm, and that's how we as police officers and firemen and emergency services operate. We couldn't do it without them, and they did a fantastic job, not only for the emergency services side of things, but also for the community as a whole. So those folks in that dispatch center really deserve a round of applause.
About 12 years ago or so, when I went through the Citizens Police Academy classes, we spent a little bit of time in there, and watching how that works, it reminds me much of being like at LAX doing air traffic control.
Yeah, you know, I've never been in an air traffic control center, but it definitely has a element of organized chaos. You have lines that are ringing, multiple lines, trying to answer those and getting the information that folks need, and then having to multitask and maybe listen to someone who's working behind you and making a request or knowing what's happening elsewhere in the center. And like I said, those folks do a fantastic job day in and day out, and they really deserve our thanks.
Well, it is the ultimate in multitasking to keep track of so many situations, and sometimes it does go very quickly. Were they able early in the early morning hours to pull additional staff in, or how did that work?
I believe that they did call in some extra staff. We did have some folks that were due to be off duty, but they ended up staying so that they could make sure that the resources were there to continue the work that needed to be done.
There's so much in communications, and I imagine going back over a number of years ago, it's so much different now. It's easier for all these agencies to keep tabs on each other and to communicate back and forth. Even if you backed up 15 years ago, it would have been a lot bigger effort just to stay in touch and know what each other's doing.
Yeah, you know, we have, of course, the radio that we rely on very heavily. We also have other methods of communication with computers in the cars, cell phones. There's just a number of ways for us to communicate. But yeah, you're right, that coordination is so important, and that's what's been taking place all week. Not just with the sheriff's office, but with county government, with the fire team, with other entities that are involved. DFPA, Kyle Reed and I are talking on a daily basis. We're all connected and coordinating so that we can provide the best possible response to this community.
What about the smoke element of this? That added another layer, pardon the pun, of complexity to what was going on.
Yeah, so the smoke, obviously, we're all seeing it, we're all breathing it. It's gotten very thick, especially in that Glide community, Glide and Idlewild. It's really thick and hazardous out there. We've been in communication with Douglas Public Health, who has continued to provide information and resources as far as the risks that are involved with being in the smoke and what you should do and what you shouldn't do, to what you can try to do to mitigate that risk. And so, there's a lot of coordination. We continue to work with them. The one thing about the smoke, as I understand it, is the smoke is kind of helping to maybe keep the fire activity down because, it brings a little bit of a shield as far as the sun. And I'm not an expert in any of that. I'm just trying to regurgitate a little bit about what I've heard, but it helps to keep that fire activity down.
Right, and that's one of the things as we get farther into the week and the potential, especially by Thursday, for some rain and the smoke to back off a bit, that this thing could kick back up in some areas again.
Again, I'm not a fireman, but I certainly have heard that there is some concern about that, and that's something that we'll just have to continue to monitor those official fire information pages and what we're getting from the fire team as far as what they're expecting to see. And I mentioned a little while ago, too, about the level twos, the folks that have been reduced from a level two to a level, I'm sorry, from a level three back down to a level two. One thing that I want to make sure that people understand is just because we've reduced an evacuation doesn't mean that the danger is no longer there. So continue to monitor these sources and making sure that you're getting the most current and up-to-date information. And again, I've said it a couple of times now, if you feel like you get back into one of these areas and you feel like maybe you're unsafe, you don't have to wait for the sheriff's office to tell you to leave. You don't have to wait for a fireman to tell you to leave. If you feel unsafe, that's the time to go.
Yeah, definitely. As we wrap up, are you expecting, well, really at this point, it's kind of unknown what to expect as to when this is going to slow down further.
Yeah, so this is an event that is being evaluated on an hourly basis. You know, we continue to work, and so we'll stay in close touch with these folks and just continue to provide the information that we can to the public.
All right, Sergeant Brad O'Dell, the Douglas County Sheriff's Office, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
1257, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.